Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content featured in this episode on how to set up strategic IP management systems comes from Martin Bookings.
Welcome to today's deep dive. So I want you to imagine something. Imagine spending, say $5 million a year protecting brilliant engineering, only to realize that not a single one of those patents actually stops your biggest competitor from just eating your market share.
Ouch. Yeah.
Right. But the thing is, for most IT managers listening right now, that is not some wild nightmare scenario. I mean, it's just a regular Tuesday.
Because protecting an idea perfectly, from a strict legal standpoint, that has almost nothing to do with actually protecting a business model.
And that is exactly the trap so many companies fall into. You know, usually when we talk about intellectual property, there is this immense expectation of precision. You file a patent, an examiner reviews the claims, and the office, well, they either grant it or reject it.
Right. It's very binary.
Exactly. A trademark is cleared, a design is registered, you get a certificate with a nice little seal on it.
Which is incredibly comforting for an organization. I mean, we like things to be categorical and measurable.
We do. But then you step back and you look at managing a global IP portfolio for a massive corporation, and all that comforting precision completely vanishes. Suddenly, you are looking at a management landscape that is just deeply murky.
Oh, completely murky.
The conversation is no longer about the individual legal right. The conversation becomes, how is this massive, expensive legal machine actually serving the core business?
Which is the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters.
Yeah.
And for the folks joining us today, you experienced heads of IP, you patent attorneys, you IP managers, you already know how to file a patent.
Right. They know the basics.
Exactly. You know how to clear a trademark.
Yeah.
You navigate those binary technical legalities in your sleep.
So we're absolutely not going to talk about checklists or basic legal definitions or, how to run a compliance audit today. This deep dive is about elevating intellectual property from a reactive administrative cost center into a proactive, top-down strategic enabler.
A massive shift in perspective.
Huge. And we are pulling from the insights of industry practitioner Martin Bookjones today. His material is brilliant because it is an academic and it's not purely legal either.
No, it's fundamentally business oriented.
Right. It is about how to build a clear management logic, a narrative that flows from a corporate vision to a concrete strategy all the way down to operational execution.
Because if you want to build a system that genuinely drives the business forward, you cannot start by looking at your internal processes.
Or auditing your current patents, right?
Right. You have to start at the absolute top of the food chain. Hmm. Before you can manage a portfolio, the entire organization, and I mean the C-suite, R&D, marketing, not just the legal department.
Everybody.
Everybody must have a shared understanding of what valuable IP actually means for the company's specific growth journey.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are starting with what Bookjones calls the North Star, the IP vision and the IP policy.
The foundation.
Exactly. If the overarching corporate strategy is the destination we are trying to reach, the IP vision is the vehicle we've chosen to get there. And the IP policy represents the guardrails keeping us on the highway.
That is the exact right framing. The IP vision is incredibly concise. I mean, we are talking about a short 3 to 4 sentence statement.
Three sentences.
Just 3 or 4 sentences. But it has to answer 3 fundamental questions. How will IP help us win in the market? Who triggers the IP decisions? And what is the actual tangible definition of valuable IP for us right now?
Like, is value defined by the sheer size of the portfolio just to impress investors?
Exactly. Or is it aggressive licensing income? Or maybe securing the flexibility to collaborate with open source partners?
But let me challenge that premise for a second.
Yeah.
If I am a seasoned head of IP, I already know what my vision for the department is. I know what our patents are trying to achieve.
Yeah.
So why do I need to go through the bureaucratic and honestly often painful process of forcing the CEO and top management to formally approve a basic 3-sentence document?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the vision isn't actually written for the head of IP. It's written for everyone else.
Oh, interesting.
Without top-level executive approval, the IP vision does not have the authority to align conflicting departments. Think about how this plays out in a boardroom on a random Wednesday afternoon.
It's usually a mess.
Right. R&D comes to the table wanting to file a patent for every clever engineering tweak they've made. Because, you know, patent filings look fantastic on their end-of-year performance reviews.
Of course.
Meanwhile, legal is sitting across the table, terrified of budget overruns from global maintenance fees. And the product teams, they just want to launch the new device next month without getting slapped with an injunction.
So you basically have three departments with entirely different incentive structures, all fighting over the exact same budget.
Precisely. And when they fight over those priorities, the vision serves as the ultimate tiebreaker. If top management doesn't sign off on those three sentences, IP just remains this isolated, misunderstood legal function.
Just a cost center.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But imagine the CEO has signed a document stating, our IP vision is to secure freedom to operate in automation software and fiercely protect key algorithmic differentiators.
Suddenly that boardroom conversation completely changes.
It does. R&D cannot justify draining the budget on minor hardware tweaks anymore because the hardware doesn't serve the signed vision. It forces leadership to own IP as a strategic capability.
It takes the emotion and the internal politics right out of the resource allocation. I love that.
Yeah.
And so from that high-level vision, we step down into the policy, the guardrails on the highway, like I mentioned.
Right.
Bookchin's describes this as a 1-2-page rule book. It basically translates that lofty vision into maybe 6-10 mid-level principles, things like thematic scope, priority principles, and risk expectations.
Yeah, the policy defines what must be governed from an IP standpoint without dictating exactly how the daily tasks are executed.
So it's broad but actionable.
Yes. Take a B2B service provider, for example. They might not have a massive traditional patent portfolio. But if their top-level vision recognizes that undocumented trade secrets and operational know-how are their core competitive assets,
the policy takes that and creates a concrete guardrail.
Exactly. It dictates that identifying and safeguarding that know-how is a mandatory priority across all business units.
Which means the policy isn't just a legal memo. It actually changes behavior.
It has to.
It means HR has to change how they offboard employees. It means IT has to change server access limits for sensitive operational data. It shifts the entire company culture around what an asset actually is.
Exactly. Or consider a technology manufacturer that has historically rewarded R&D for sheer filing quantity.
Right, the classic file everything approach.
Yeah. If their new vision shifts them toward protecting only core automation differentiators, their new policy might explicitly state that any patent filings outside of those core domains now require special board-level approval.
Oh, wow. So it intentionally creates friction for off-strategy actions. But here's the danger, right? You can have the most beautiful vision signed by the CEO and guardrails meticulously documented by legal. And absolutely nothing changes on the ground because the business units are still spending their budgets the exact same way they did last year.
Which happens all the time.
How do you actually force the shift?
And that brings us to the bridge to execution, the IP strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Building on your earlier analogy, if the policy is the guardrails, the strategy is the GPS.
Okay, I like that.
It is calculating the exact route, the fuel required, and the specific pit stops for the next, say, 12 to 24 months.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. You just laid out an airtight case for why the overarching vision fundamentally requires top management approval to be effective.
Right.
But Bookchin notes that the strategy itself does not require top management endorsement. It is approved and owned by the business unit leaders.
That's correct.
Why is the actual roadmap left to the middle management layer? That feels like a disconnect.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it actually makes perfect organizational sense. Strategy is fundamentally about operational trade-offs, and more importantly, it is about who holds the purse strings.
Ah, the budget.
Always the budget. Top management sets the company's direction. They say, we are pivoting the entire company to electric vehicles. But the business unit leaders are the ones holding the P&L.
They are the ones actually closest to the market trends, the aggressive competitors, and the daily product lifecycle.
Exactly. They're the ones who actually have to pay for the patent prosecution and maintenance out of their specific departmental budgets.
So if an IP strategy is dictated entirely from the top down, or...
Or worse, if it's written in a vacuum by the legal department with zero commercial input...
It instantly becomes disconnected from commercial reality.
Completely. By forcing the business unit leaders to own the IP strategy, you ensure they link IP investments directly to their specific business outcomes.
The source material highlighted an incredible example of this with an automotive supplier.
Oh, the combustion to electric pivot, yes.
Yeah, So the corporate vision announces the shift to electrification. So the business unit leader in charge of powertrain development has to write an IP strategy for the next 18 months. And to execute the vision, they have to walk into a room of legacy combustion engineers and tell them, we are cutting your patent filing budget by 50%.
Which is a brutal conversation to have.
It is. Just awful. Good. But the strategy document is the shield that justifies that tough operational call.
Exactly. The business unit leader redirects that saved capital to fund heavy, aggressive patent filings in battery management systems instead.
And crucially, they tie their departmental KPIs to the share of patents that are directly linked to electric product revenues.
They aren't just filing blindly anymore. They're building a fence around their future revenue streams.
And contrast that aggressive growth strategy with the medical device startup example.
Right, a completely different scenario.
A cash-strapped startup cannot afford a sprawling, ego-driven global portfolio. So their business unit leaders build an IP strategy that is ruthlessly defensive.
They have to be. They deliberately exclude filing in jurisdictions with low return potential.
And they take every dollar saved and heavily prioritize pre-launch freedom to operate or FTO analysis.
Because for them, missing a single blocking patent from a competitor wouldn't just hurt margins, it would end the entire company.
Their strategy is about pure survival and targeted defense, not building a trophy wall of certificates in the lobby.
Exactly.
So we have the vision defining the goal, the policy setting the guardrails, and the strategy calculating the exact route and budget. But, I mean, a strategy looks great on a PowerPoint slide, right?
Always does.
Actually, executing this requires a massive cultural shift. You are asking an entire department of attorneys and engineers who have spent 20 years treating IP like a reactive toll booth to suddenly act like proactive business strategists.
Which is, without a doubt, the hardest part of the entire framework.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focused topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
The biggest initial hurdle in moving from blueprint to reality is almost never technical. It is cultural.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Business units are conditioned to see the legal team as the department of no. R&D sees invention disclosures as tedious paperwork, taking them away from real engineering. Breaking that entrenched perspective requires visible, immediate results.
Which brings up a recommendation Book Johns makes that I really need to challenge here.
Okay, let's hear it.
He champions what he calls partial implementation. He argues that you do not need a massive, complete, pristine IP management system on day one.
He does.
But wait, partial implementation. If I am a head of IP and I tell my board we are rolling out, quote unquote, half of a governance system, the internal auditors are going to have an absolute field day with us.
Yeah.
How is a partial rollout not just a broken, incomplete system?
It is a totally valid concern, especially in highly regulated industries. But think about the reality of a living, breathing corporation.
Hmm.
You cannot freeze daily operations for 2 years while a committee builds the perfect, frictionless IP management system in the background.
That's true. The business doesn't stop.
Partial implementation isn't a compromise. It is a highly pragmatic pathway.
So you're saying you have to generate quick wins to prove the concept to the culture.
Exactly. Establishing just a single documented IP policy for your highest risk product line and setting up basic management review routines for that one area alone immediately reduces risk.
It brings clarity to decision making long before the full global system is mature.
It builds credibility step by step. And this context is vital when we talk about formal frameworks like DIN 77006.
Right. For those less familiar, that's the recognized German standard for quality in IP management.
Right. And many IP professionals view standards like DIN 77006 as a terrifying all-or-nothing compliance checklist.
Like a pass-fail test.
They treat it exactly like a restaurant health inspection. Right. If you miss one box, you fail the whole thing. But that is entirely the wrong way to look at it. It is a maturity model. It is a structural framework designed to help you gradually embed IP into corporate governance over time.
So you don't try to boil the ocean. You might start by standardizing the invention disclosure form across just three key business units.
Yes. And once they see that it speeds up the filing process and secures their budget faster, they buy in.
Then you expand it. And over time, as you layer in these components, full implementation creates synergistic effects.
The system becomes self-reinforcing.
Operational decisions are guided by the strategy, the execution is supported by the standardized process, and the outcomes feed right back into the loop.
Which perfectly sets up the final and perhaps most critical piece of this puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the system is finally running, once you have the vision, the guardrails, the GPS, and the cultural buy-in.
How do you prevent this expensive new system from instantly becoming obsolete?
Exactly.
Because the market does not stand still. You can align all your budgets perfectly today, and tomorrow, a competitor drops a disruptive new product that renders your entire portfolio completely irrelevant.
Exactly. An IP management system that remains static is not just useless, it becomes an active liability. The system must be a living entity, driven by continuous improvement and strategic control.
And that requires constant monitoring, looking both outward and inward.
Externally, you are tracking competitor filings, global litigation trends, shifting regulations.
And internally, you are asking the hard questions, like, does our active portfolio actually still reflect our current business priorities? Are we paying maintenance fees on patents for a product line we discontinued 3 years ago?
Which happens more often than anyone wants to admit. And that rigorous evaluation leads directly to operational adjustments. It gives management the data to reallocate budgets dynamically or update the criteria for prosecuting a patent.
It allows the company to systematically handle both risk management and opportunity management.
Yes, both sides of the coin.
Let's drill down into opportunity management for a second, because this is where the real aha moment lives for me. Everyone understands risk management. It's defensive. It's monitoring third-party patents to avoid infringement or finding vulnerabilities in your trade secret protections.
But opportunity management is constructive.
It is. Opportunity management isn't just about passively looking for someone to license your old patents to. It is about using IP data as elite competitive intelligence.
Right. Instead of doing a generic legal search, you map out exactly where your top three competitors are filing densely. You analyze those clusters, and you find the white space.
The technological gap in materials, science, or software that they entirely missed.
Yes, and you hand that literal map to your R&D team before they even start inventing.
You are shifting IP from being the toll booth at the end of the pipeline to being the strategic scout at the very beginning.
That is the exact shift in mindset we are talking about.
So what does this all mean for the daily workload of the department? I know what a lot of IP professionals are thinking right now.
They're thinking they're already overworked.
Right. They already track mountains of data. They live and die by 1,000 different filing deadlines. Aren't we just burying them under another massive layer of administrative reporting and KPI tracking?
This raises an important question about what metrics actually matter to a business. Performance evaluation in a mature system has to mercilessly eliminate vanity metrics.
Vanity metrics. Give me an example.
Raw filing counts. The sheer volume of the portfolio. The number of office actions responded to. Those are vanity metrics.
They tell you how busy the legal department is, but they tell you absolutely nothing about how much value they're creating.
Exactly. I can hear the boardroom conversation now. Congratulations, we filed 500 patents this year.
Great. What do they do for our market share?
No idea, but we filed 500 of them.
It's absurd when you say it out loud.
It really is.
Yeah.
We need to shift entirely to impact metrics. What is your cost-to-value ratio? What are your actual grant rates in the core technologies identified in the vision?
How fast is your FTO clearance cycle time for new product launches?
Right. Documentation and metrics must serve management decision-making, not the other way around.
So if tracking a specific metric doesn't help a business unit leader justify a budget increase, reallocate resources, or actively shape the company's competitive position,
you simply shouldn't be tracking it.
It fundamentally reframes IP from an administrative chore into a genuine strategic control system, which also completely changes how we should think about internal audits.
Well, audits.
Right. The word audit usually strikes absolute fear into the hearts of an IP department. It feels like a witch hunt to find out which attorney missed a filing deadline.
But in this mature top-down system, internal audits exist to uncover weaknesses in the system itself, not to assign blame to individuals.
So if an audit reveals a wildly inconsistent application of filing criteria across different regions, that is not a failure of the individual patent attorney.
No, that is a failure of the policy or the strategy to provide clear enough guardrails. The audit is just a feedback loop designed to tighten the bolts of the machine.
Okay, this has been a profound shift in perspective. Let's briefly recap the management logic we've just built.
Sounds good.
We started by recognizing that IP management cannot be treated as a collection of administrative tasks or a box-ticking compliance exercise. It requires a top-down logic. You have to establish a North Star, the vision and the policy that gets everyone, from the CEO to the newest R&D engineer, speaking the exact same language about what valuable IP actually is.
Then you translate that high-level North Star into a living, breathing roadmap, the IP strategy. And you deliberately put the pen for that strategy in the hands of the business unit leaders, ensuring the legal budget aligns directly with the commercial reality of the P&L.
That strategy then dictates the daily operational decisions, tells R&D what to invent, it tells legal what to file and what to abandon, and it tells the business where to look for hidden risks and white space opportunities.
And finally, you accept that the system is never truly finished. You use continuous monitoring, impact metrics, and system-level internal audits to constantly refine the machine.
It takes intellectual property out of a reactive, misunderstood silo and embeds it deeply into the very DNA of corporate governance.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you look in your own operations.
Okay.
We've talked extensively today about aligning human behavior and budgets. But consider the explosion of generative AI.
Oh, it is changing everything.
If generative AI tools can soon draft thousands of patentable technical variations in a matter of minutes, the old quantity-first IP strategy is completely dead.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Your strategic guardrails are no longer just competing against the output of human engineers. They are competing against algorithms capable of flooding the zone.
So ask yourself, is your IP vision and your current policy robust enough to govern machine-generated innovation?
Exactly. Or is your system built to just keep running on autopilot, efficiently and blindly protecting the way we used to invent yesterday?
That is the ultimate stress test for any framework. If your IP operations are just functioning like a basic filter binary, rigid, focused only on the individual legal rights, you are going to miss the holistic health and the future threats to the business.
You really are.
You have to navigate those muddy waters and build a system that actually steers the ship. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take a hard look at your own operations this week and ask yourself, are you just filing rights or are you driving a strategy? We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.